I remember 4 or 5 years ago having a, I don't even know how this young lady was able to schedule a call with me. So she ended up being able to schedule a free call. I was looking at her resume and she had all the different sims on there. She had Splunk, she had QRadar, she had Nitro, she had ArcSight. And so I started asking about them and she couldn't tell me nothing about them. And so I was like, so you ain't working with none of this stuff? Nah, I just got my resume done. When you do that, I'm gonna tell y'all a little secret. Let me whisper to you. When you black, the more stuff you got on your resume, the harder your interview gonna be. Yo, 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 welcome back to the podcast, bro. Welcome back, welcome back. It's another week and you're in for another treat. Now, while you're still mosey on in and listening into the video, I want to kind of just say what I've been up to and also about like some of our favorite shows that we've been watching for the last, what, couple of years now. I think 5 years, I believe. So for me, just been grinding, working hard, trying to get better at this content, helping my clients get some more wins. If those of you follow me on LinkedIn, you've seen that. And I don't know if I'm going to share them here or I'm going to do them later. But I'm definitely have some more big wins for clients, and I'm definitely happy for them. Looking forward to promoting some more big wins for the clients. It's Q3. Jobs are hiring, and we're going to actually get into a report about the jobs. I think the unemployment rate or the loss of jobs had like the lowest job, something like that. I'm getting it wrong. But while we're here real quick, I want to talk about, you know, Raising Kanan, man. These are spoilers if you haven't seen it yet, but RIP to Uncle Marvin, Rock, Lou, Famous, RIP to, who else we got? D-Wiz, everybody that we really loved on the show, man, especially Uncle Marvin. Uncle Marvin was one of my favorite characters. Sad he had to go out like that. I'm really not understanding what's going on with the writing, because if you watch OG Power, you know that when Kanan got burnt up, he went to D.C. and she kind of like helped nurse him up back to health. And so I'm not understanding, based on what's transpired with Jukebox, you know, killing his mom and him killing her dad, how are they even able to talk to each other again? So I feel like it's just inconsistencies with the writing. I really feel like, since I think they only had 8 episodes. I know they probably wouldn't want to have 10 or 15, kind of like OG's Power when they had like them 6 extra episodes about like who killed Ghost or the recount of their events on when Ghost died. And I think that's what they wanted. I think they would have could have made it much better. But, I mean, it was cool. We got to see young Tommy and young Ghost. They were, like, what, 10 or 11? So we know that from this show there will probably be a time skip, and it's going to be called Power Book Origins, where you're still going to have Kanan, Breeze, Ghost, Tommy, Tasha, Kanan's baby mama. I forget her name. But all in all, man, it was one of the better series. If I wanted to rank them, I'm going to say – not of pure nostalgia, I'm going to say it's going to be Kanan was up here. That's number one. And this is excluding Power OG. So Kanan, number one. Number two would be Power Book 2 Ghost. And then three would be Tommy's, only because Tommy's faced issues with COVID and everything else. So he had the least amount of seasons. I think he only had 3 seasons. It was still solid, but it could have been better. And also, you know, football is about to be back upon us. Go Denver. You know, I'm a Bo Nix fan. I'm not one of them people that say we're going to win the Super Bowl just because we were close to going to the Super Bowl last year. It's so hard to get to the Super Bowl. Yes, we've upgraded the offense, and defense is mostly the same, but you still got to go out there and play. So I'm just hoping that they have another good season. If they get to the Super Bowl, they get there. If they don't, it's not the end of the world. Sometimes it's how the cookies – well, what they say? How the cookie crumbles or how the dices fall or whatever it is. Here are some of today's topics. Hackers are phone scamming financial execs to extort them. New Mexico court hits Meta with an additional $567 million fine. Levi's was hacked. July layoffs dropped to a 2-year low. And Cloudflare launches Kitesurf, a browser for AI agents. And we got some other articles that's in between there, but these were the most popular. But if you still rocking with us right now, subscribe, like button, and share this out. I was making a post on Threads. And I don't know if I can, I might try to go through an edit right here, but I was just talking about how I definitely noticed that the people who watch this show are not the people that like the same things that's on a Textual Chatter channel. Textual Chatter, people come there really more so for problems to be solved, for the interviews and stuff they learn from my content. And here people come to digest tech news and maybe just learn something, not necessarily having problems solved. And so now it took me too long to realize I had two distinct type of avatars for the content, but I've been able to see, like, this channel don't even have 100 subscribers as I'm recording this, and we are hitting numbers that could be similar to what we hit specifically just on the textual talk type of podcast news show. We have comparable numbers, and that lets me know that I made the right decision. So shout out to y'all that's been tuning in. Shout out to people on YouTube that's been sharing and YouTube sharing this this information out there. But yeah, let's get to it. I think the first things first I want to talk about is the financial scam. So give me a quick second and we will get there. Hackers are phone scamming financial execs to extort millions. Google Threat Intelligence issued an urgent advisory regarding an escalating campaign by sophisticated cybercrime groups tracked under the collective designation UNC6671, including subgroups Falcon, Helix, Pink, and Redact. These threat actors are bypassing multi-million dollar perimeter security systems by directly calling enterprise employees at major U.S. investment firms, private equity groups, and mergers and acquisition consultancies. They're using social engineering tactics, caller ID spoofing, and persuasive scripts. The attackers impersonate internal IT help desk technicians or corporate peers. Once an employee is tricked into revealing credentials or approving an MFA push notification, the hackers gain access to an internal communications, confidential deal room documents, and merger and acquisition schedules. High-value corporate targets involved in capital deployment, leverage buyouts, and private deal negotiations. The extortion demands are ransoms typically range from $750,000 to $3 million and cryptocurrency to prevent exfiltrated deal documents from being leaked publicly. The financial footprint. Google traced a single primary cryptocurrency wallet tied to this collective that has already collected $10 million in Bitcoin. So you can spend $1 million on AI-driven SOC platforms and zero-trust software, but a smooth-talking hacker on a mobile phone calling your IT desk can still bypass all of it. People are still the most targeted vector in the corporate cybersecurity. And yeah, I think that's one of the things too, because if you reach out to execs first, they're going to get scared and they're going to probably pressure everybody into folding and meeting their demands, versus if you reached out to the people that's on the security team, they're going to make sure whatever you're saying that you got, that you have it. And yeah, it's just unfortunate that people are falling for this. And $10 million is a lot. $10 million is a lot. It's like every time we read things like this, it's like, why are we trying to do stuff the right way versus these people? But I will say that this is short-lived money, because these people do not know how to leave well enough alone, and they always end up getting caught. So what the exec should do is, and I think this is it's a hot topic. A lot of ways I think they're getting some of these numbers is kind of just do some reconnaissance when you have these breaches from these what are they called? Telecommunications companies. You looking at people's LinkedIns and what they do, and then you're just doing some research and spraying and praying on whoever gets emails, seeing if they get them. And if they get them and if they engage, that's when you say, okay, let's see what we can get out of these people. So that sucks. The way to combat this is trust but verify. So even with somebody saying they have some of yours, trust what they say, but verify if they have it. And if not, let them go. Now, I know people don't want to deal with the financial impact, or the people start leaking whatever alleged information that they say that they have for these people, or just all these different things that they said they're doing. They are pretty much – so let me start right here, actually. I think the biggest one that you can mitigate for is the social engineering tactics. So caller ID spoofing and stuff in there, but we've all been spooked before where, like, I remember one time I was getting a new phone. I was switching from Verizon to AT&T, and I got spoofed by like an attacker or something as I'm trying to set my phone up, and I said, this is kind of odd. And I didn't believe nothing they said. I just felt like it was odd that they called me. I didn't believe them. And then these precise scripts, whatever it could be, attackers lie about whatever they have, what they think they have. But the one that I'm going to zone in on that they can actually prevent is impersonating internal IT help desk technicians or corporate peers. So if you are a exec or you're interacting with these people immediately, if you start getting these calls that are not happening through the typical fashion, like IT help desk typically will ping you on Teams or Slack, whatever you use, or they'll send you an email. They'll just up and call execs. And then when it comes to execs, most of them have like executive support. So there's some buffer there before you get to them. So they should remember that and reach out to the help desk and like, hey, you guys got a ticket or anything for me? Or also, the help desk needs to make sure they just verify all these people that they're talking to. And same way with the execs. Don't believe somebody from the help desk that they're trying to help you and all this. No. Ask them what the ticket number is. Reach out to your security team and have them look into it instantly, and they can scan the database to see if you got any tickets or open tickets in your name. So there are ways to do this. Just kind of breathe when these things happen and take it slow. That's all I would say. So following a landmark March verdict where a New Mexico jury found Meta liable for knowingly design enabling risk to children's mental health and concealing child sexual exploitation material on Facebook and Instagram, State District Judge Brian Bashid ordered Meta to pay an additional $567 million into a state-managed public abatement fund. Combined with the jury's initial $375 million penalty, Meta's total legal liability in New Mexico now stands at $942 million. So, yeah, they're literally almost at a B in New Mexico. The judge explicitly adopted a public nuisance legal framework framing Meta's platform recommendation algorithms as factory pollution and platform's harm as environmental contamination that Meta is legally obligated to clean up. So, fund allocation. $420 million of the new $567 million judgment is earmarked directly for youth mental health treatment programs, with the remaining $147 million covering screenings, prevention, and public awareness over 5 years. And now they're doing the mandated AI age verification. Meta has ordered to build a specialized AI under 13 prediction model within 2 years, analyzing user social graphs, posting habits, and content consumption to flag underage users automatically. And for enforcement, Meta must establish a dedicated portal for school staff to report suspected under 13 accounts and submit compliance reports twice a year. Meta has stated it plans to appeal. So, courts are shifting away from treating algorithmic designs as protected speech. They are starting to treat platform architecture like an environmental pollution. Expect state attorney generals across the country to adopt the same public nuisance legal strategy. So, let's talk about, I think the biggest thing right here is the mandated AI age verification. Now, it's supposed to be looking for kids under 13, but what if you are under 13, but you look older than 13? I think that is one of the biggest downfalls of AI. It trying to perceive how old it believes you are. Like, think about it. We're humans, and we see people who we think are younger or older than they are all the time. And since they are citing this child endangerment and all this different stuff when it comes to Facebook, I don't think this is all on Meta, people. I think this is also on the parents. It's just like anything can turn into a weapon if you get it for. Let's say your child plays baseball. Now, you're not monitoring them with their baseball bat. They decide to take the baseball bat and go hit all the kids in the neighborhood with it. Now, would you say that the baseball bat company is in error for this? Or would you say the person that should have been monitoring what their child is doing is at fault for not doing that? I would say it's the latter. Give me option B for 500, Alex. So, having said all that, I do not think it's all on Meta. Because let's be honest here, right? If we talk about things from prevention or all these other things, you always can lie right now and say you're older than what you are, make you a profile. You have older men talking to underage girls all the time, and underage girls wanting to appear to be older to attract these older men, and vice versa. That's a big thing. Now, I don't know how the AI is supposed to actually be a one-to-one. Is it something that's constantly going to be on specific people who have been labeled to be under 13 thing all the time, say, hey, this is a young person? Like, for me, I would think outside of the data that it is just scoping or just looking at your face is not enough. You should pay attention to what they're looking up and what they've been searching on the phone. Now, I know it's intrusive, but this has to be for the kids because kids are going to look up kid things. Kids are going to have kid conversations. And to me, contextualizing the face with information or data that's on a phone or the device, to me, that is the only way that this can happen. I know this is not something that Apple or Google, Samsung, whatever do for their devices, but that is what I believe when it comes to kids. Everything is moving so fast. You can do this. You can make deep fakes and all these other things. The only way to get it is by the conversation. And I say that because if you've worked any type of job or whatever, or you've seen a person where you thought they were older than what they were, immediately with if you talk to this person within 3 seconds and you hear their conversation or how they talk, you say, this is a child. Now, AI, if it's only looking at your face and these girls and boys have on makeup or let's say a boy started puberty early, so let's say he's 10, but he some type of way has facial hair and a mustache, he may be able to pass for 13. So I don't know. I think this is kind of scary when we kind of talk about this AI stuff when it comes to that. Facebook's not going to miss the, well, Meta's not going to miss the money. To them, they'll write it off some type of way of like whatever fines or something they have to pay. So I guess it's a win-win for New Mexico. All right, so we know that schools starting back, college people are going to school that may not have laptops. Not so. I found an article from TechRadar about back-to-school tech and the best budgeted laptops tested for college. And so what they recommended was, I think number one would be the Apple MacBook Neo. So the specs is the Apple A18 Pro, 6-core chip, 8 gigs of RAM with a 13-inch display that's 2408 by 1506. Battery life is 13 and a half hours. And the verdict is pretty much the best overall value for students who prefer Mac OS, offering long battery life and solid everyday performance. The next one is an Acer Chromebook Spin 312. It is $289.99. The specs is an Intel N100, has 4 gigs of RAM, 12.2-inch touchscreen, and battery life is 11-plus hours. It's the best sub-$300 entry-level 2-in-1 convertible laptop for basic web research, document editing, and classic note-taking. Now, the next Chromebook is an Acer Chromebook Plus 514. It has an Intel Core 3 100U, 8 gigs of RAM, 14-inch display, 1920 by 1200, but the battery life is 8.5 hours. So it's recommended for mid-tier Chrome OS laptops for heavier multitasking, video calls, and running multiple web apps. So if you don't have the money to get a MacBook Air or a MacBook Pro, I think that MacBook Neo is perfect for kids going back to school. As you know, Apple makes sure that the apps and things that runs on their machine are optimized for their processors. And that's what I would vote that you would spend your money on because I believe that would be the best. I think some places, I think it's, let me go back and look real quick. It's $599. I think with a student discount, you can get it for $499. So it could be the best 500-ish bucks that you spend on a laptop for your child. Or if you're just a person that just want a laptop, but you don't want to use it all the time, but you really don't want a tablet. I think that's where it's at, the sweet spot it is for that. So definitely tell me what you think about getting your hands on one of those laptops. Or if you so far you have a MacBook Neo, let us know in the comments below. Let's have some fun. We're gonna string some stuff along and have some fun. So July layoffs dropped to a 2-year low, but AI squeezes entry level hiring. So data from outplacement firm Challenger Gray and Christmas revealed the U.S. employer job cuts plunged to 33,429 in July, a 46% drop year over year and the lowest single month layoff total since July 2024. Weekly unemployment claims also dropped below 200,000, pointing to an overall resilient labor market. However, behind the low layoff numbers lies a structural shift in how tech companies are managing headcount, particularly around entry-level corporate hiring and AI deployment. So, AI is the primary layoff driver. AI was cited as the direct cause of 33% of July cuts, marking the fifth consecutive month where AI was named the leading catalyst for corporate restructuring, primarily in tech. So the entry-level hiring squeeze. Data from career platform Handshake shows job postings for entry-level corporate roles traditionally open to recent college grads has fallen about 15%, and it's an increased competition. The number of applicants per available entry-level job postings has surged 30%, reflecting a crowded candidate pool competing for fewer junior positions. So that is loaded. It is hard to stand out, but I'll say a lot of people applying for those entry-level roles don't have good resumes and may not have the stuff they need to succeed in the role. And while we are talking about that, I actually want to react to a video from one of our favorite TikTokers on how they feel about the job market and entry-level jobs. Here we go.
There are no entry-level jobs. We had interns at the company I worked for, and a lot of them came on board with the idea that they were going to get hired for an entry-level job. This is their senior year. What are they working so hard for? One of them had this idea because the manager kept pumping his head up saying, you're doing so amazing. I'm going to make sure, you know, I put in for you to get hired. I looked this boy dead in the eye and I said, you're not going to get hired. They're letting directors go. They let half of IT department go. They're letting HR go. I think this is it. And he's like, no. Like, you know, I've been told, like, if I keep working on this project, and he decided to dedicate all his time and he finished that project. Guess what? His offboarding is for this Friday. I haven't seen that boy all week because he knew he wasn't getting hired. The moment he realized he wasn't getting hired, he stopped showing up. I don't know how to tell a lot of you graduates this, but there are no entry-level jobs. You're not getting hired. I'm holding on by thread on my job. And I've been working in IT for 13 years. There are no entry-level jobs right now. And we can talk more about it on my Twitch today, Thursday. I do IT, I do corporate talk, all on my Twitch. We can run it back because I gave some great, great advice, which came in handy with my job because everybody got let go on the IT help desk but me. So, I don't know. I think I'm an expert in this. Join me on my Twitch, 8 p.m. Let's talk about it. Let's talk about how you can get hired because at this point, baby, we all looking. You up against people who got 20 years in the game and they got their doctorates, baby. That little bachelor's ain't doing nothing but making us laugh.
Okay. Now she said what she said. Let me say what I'm going to say. I disagree. There are entry-level roles, but there is a lot of competition to those. If you just graduated, you should be looking for early career programs at companies that are designed strictly for you, because that's what they want to put you in. They can get you and mold you in the company culture, and you can be there a couple of years. Investment well spent. As far as her seeing people with doctorates and stuff upon the entry-level roles, some people do that, but most of the people who do that do not get hired for the said role because they know that this person has more experience than what we're looking for, and this is just a role they're taking that once they find something they actually like, they will leave us. It's why a lot of people, like when they're trying to get in help desk, right? Free game. If you're trying to get in help desk, your resume should not be all about cybersecurity. Why? Because they're going to look at him like, by the time when you get with us, you're just trying to get in cybersecurity and you're going to be gone. So your resume should be more around IT stuff that you did and then make that pivot to cyber after that. It's all about the illusion and the game. And so, like, while I'm here, I'm actually going to show you an example of an entry level or early career role just for y'all. Give me a second. There we go. All right. I'm not going to read this whole thing, right? Y'all don't care that much about that. But check it out. So this person, Steven, wasn't sure what cybersecurity field he wanted to pursue as undergraduate level graduation loomed. Data protection, cloud security, access management sounded interesting, but he didn't want to commit to one career path. And so, like I said, these are rotational programs. So this one is specifically for Capital One Careers. As you can see right here, Capital One. Like with all our rotational programs, let's click on this to see what it shows. Okay, so recent grads can complete a real work that matters while investing in their future with Capital One's development programs. Here's how your ambition and our developmental programs create a perfect match. So cool, they give you background on all that stuff right there. Let's go back to here. So the CSDP participants are also encouraged to complete professional development through certifications, in-house training programs at Capital One's tech-wide team meetings. Christina, a CSDP associate with Cyber Risk Modeling Team, has completed the Amazon Web Service Cloud Partitioner and Security Plus to validate and enhance her fluency of the cloud core security functions. All right, now let me see. Okay, so this is the first cohort. But the way I found this is I clicked on, let me see. Where is it? Commercial banking, investment, technology, cybersecurity. Screening, recruiter of your experience. Let's see what you need to actually be a part of this, because I'm really trying to help like the young people who are in school, specifically for them. Our programs to try new things, grow your skills. I'm missing something here. A 2-year program where associates explore different roles, teams, and technologies to assess what cybersecurity pass is right for them. All right. So each rotation lasts 1 year. You can be well-rounded. Here we go. So it's open to recent graduates becoming full-time associates on day one. Participants experience 2-team rotations and spend 2 years assessing challenging. Okay. So if you're a recent graduate, you need to be looking for stuff like this. And then I could just do the same thing. Let's see. Entry level, early career, cyber security rotational programs. So Capital One, Hewlett Packard has one, SAP, Palo Alto. So I've just been having calls with people all the time, and I've been telling them like, hey, you are leaving stuff on the table because you don't know what you can actually do. But I'm not going to bore you up with all that, right? Let me go back to here. All right, so that was just to let you guys know that, hey, what's going on or whatever. Now, we're going to react to another video where this is probably for people with experience. If you're familiar with Benny, Benny was talking about his wife and how she got hit up for some roles. And we're going to talk about this, too, because this is my forte right here. So let me get that video ready for y'all.
Qualified people still getting calls back for jobs. Qualified people still getting calls back. I'm just saying. So my old lady getting ready to retire from the military. And, you know, she doing her taps or whatever this week. And she just sent her a little resume out there, just bullshitting or whatever, just, you know, seeing what stick. Tell me why they called her back yesterday. A company called her back yesterday. Offer her a goddamn $110,000 just off the bat. Lady tell her, man, your resume seemed too good to be true. I thought it was AI. To come do legal work and shit. You know what I'm saying? Like, off bat. Now I know TikTok say, you know, $100K ain't no real money. You know, yeah, I forgot. But qualified people are still getting called, bro. You know.
And I'm going to pause it right there. I'm going to pause it right there. Because I was talking to y'all earlier about people still getting jobs and qualified people getting jobs. And we're going to go back into Benny's video. But let me show you something real quick, because I know I was telling y'all about this. These are some quotes from them. The services pay for themselves. When you invest in your career with the right strategy, it isn't an expense, it's leverage. So I congratulated Virgil Brown for letting his new role as a cybersecurity assurance senior engineer, and my guy LeVar for getting a new role as a security analyst. Now, I think I talked about the salary that LeVar made the jump. He almost made a jump, $50,000. He was at like 80-something. Now he's at all in all 120-something, I think, all in. And so, like, here's the testimonials for LeVar. Amazing experience, and I'm extremely satisfied. The services pay for themselves. I would definitely recommend the services because they work. Thank you so much. And then this one. I'm highly thankful and appreciative with the service. I was laid off from my InfoSec role in January and have been struggling to get back into cyber after months of no callbacks and not being selected for roles. I took the initiative, right, got it out, and with the right resume as coach to do, I finally landed the role of my dreams. So, and I know like people might like, this is the actual Virgil Brown over here. Let me see what y'all can see on the screen. Okay. Yeah. Y'all can actually see him. So this is the actual him. This is AI made this picture. I was busy, so I couldn't really put their pictures on there like I wanted to, but this is the actual him. And that's why I said I got them tagged. I'm like one of the few people that I'm going to actually have real testimonials and tag them. And if y'all want to link to the rest of them, I can put them in the description. But yeah, I want to say qualified people are still getting hired. for sure. But a lot of people do not have the correct job search strategy or a good resume to even get calls back. And why I say that, because his wife applied and she got called back quickly. I've had jobs where as long as it wasn't Workday and I applied, like within like 30 minutes or an hour, I got hit up to do a screening. But if that ain't happening for you, if your LinkedIn email is bad or all the above, you need some help. It don't even got to be for me, but I'm just letting you know you need some help. But let's finish to see what Benny got to say.
A lot of people, I always say COVID was a glitch in the system, because a lot of people was able to finesse, you know, you saw videos after video, how to finesse your resume and how to, you know, AI your resume and that, whoop, whoop. Yeah, the hiring managers in these companies saw them same TikToks, bro. And y'all thought that shit was going to last. You remember how those day in the life of a tech girly video, that trend I was just floating around? Y'all, that shit gone. I ain't seen one of them since. I wonder why. Because, you know, everybody was running out, you know, following the TikTok videos, getting the bare minimum certifications, applying for these entry-level tech positions. And when them layoffs came, they were the first ones to get caught. You know, when they was posting out, running around, showing, you know, how they was working from home, but going to get their hair and nails done and shit. Yeah, that shit dried up real quick, bro. And then y'all was finessing them resumes and AI and them fucking resumes. And then when you happen to slip through and get a call back, you can't speak to none of that shit. Because you was too busy finessing. See, it's one thing to finesse your resume and make, you know.
Hold on, man. I got to hang on real quick. Hang on real quick.
Hit the right button.
Listen, man. Now, he was cooking. What he just stated about the finesse resume and you can't speak to nothing is key. I remember 4 or 5 years ago having I don't even know how this young lady was able to schedule a call with me. So she ended up being able to schedule a free call. I was looking at her resume, and she had all the different Sims on there. She had Splunk. She had QRadar. She had Nitro. She had ArcSight. And so I started asking about them, and she couldn't tell me nothing about them. And so I was like, so you ain't working with none of this stuff? Nah, I just got my resume done. When you do that, I'm going to tell y'all a little secret. Let me whisper to you. When you black, the more stuff you got on your resume, the harder your interview going to be. I like to tell y'all, keep it simple. Whatever you don't know, don't know. We will not put it on there. Because when you get all them certs, you put all them tools and everything on there, the question will get hard. Oh, we got ourselves an expert. I need to put a video of Major Pain right here. But yeah, we got ourselves an expert here, y'all. Let's ask all these hard questions. How do I know this? It's happened to me. When the people were not trying to have a conversation with me, they just wanted to just nitpick my resume. Hey, it said you got mean time detection down by 30%. How did you do that? How'd you do that in a year? Like, bro, do you want to know what I know, or you just want to nitpick my stats, man, my KPIs, my metrics? So having said all that, that is why y'all think y'all gaming the system. And on the textual chatter channel, I got some great stuff coming up, especially with the recruiter. And we're going to talk about recruiting in a way that has not been talked about on my channel or anywhere else. And we're going to get into it, and it's going to be amazing. And we're going to talk about how all this stuff is a domino effect. All this stuff with your resume or how y'all are. So back in the days, before all the AI, people were telling y'all to copy the job description, put it in white text and make it real small to get a call back to trick the ATS, which it wasn't working no way, because guess what? A person was still reviewing the thing. Now what people resorted to doing is they put a white text AI prompt in there to kind of get the AI to say, hey, no matter what I say or on this resume, give me a call back. That will work if AI was just automatically doing all the recruitment process. And it's still not doing that on every job. Some jobs they are, where you're getting like Workday, if you're part of a Workday role, sometimes you get an instant rejection. So it is on the person to make sure they can talk about everything that they put on the resume. If you cannot do that, I don't know what to tell you. But let's let Benny continue to cook.
You know, add a little sauce, add a little razzle dazzle to it, but you can still speak to those points and speak to, you know, your actual expertise and experience in the job field. And, you know, but y'all thought, oh, that won't do nothing. And that's the problem. But I know people gonna argue, nah, man, I ain't never had no issue getting no call back, because the shit that's on my resume is what I did. Those programs, those you know, goddamn numbers, those actual things, I can speak to them because I know about, because I actually did them.
So I'm going to slightly disagree with him here, because I have my own self been a person who has qualified for pretty much most things I apply to. I do not really tailor my resume. I only apply to stuff that my skill set fits. And there's been times where I didn't get the call back on something, and I know that I fit it. So it's not even about sometimes about doing what you did. This system, other job search things, some of the stuff is messed up based on what type of ATS they're using. And if they're getting so many applicants that either the rec's already closed, been put on hold, or you're not even getting a chance to get reviewed on. So I would disagree on that, because I do know qualified people who are not getting hit up. Now, granted, sometimes it is the resume and other stuff. But at the end of the day, if the context of what you got in that resume and a recruiter gets to see it, you got a good chance of possibly getting a call back.
You know what I'm saying? Just saying. When they ask me, have you worked in, you know, SAP? Have you worked in DPAS? Have you worked in, you know, these different, you know, logistics systems and programs and shit? I can speak to them because I know them. You know what I'm saying? Y'all get so busy and caught up in trying to finesse that motherfuckers forget they're not qualified for the shit they're applying to. That, and then even when you was working these jobs and adding to your resume, you was too busy. I ain't doing all that, doing the bare minimum shit, barely doing anything. And then turn around and think that a degree, a master's or a bachelor, is gonna make up for the fact that you didn't build and gain experience in these jobs. I'm just saying, you applying for supervisory positions, but you ain't never managed more than two people, even if you manage anything at all. Never been a head or a lead of a fucking team. You know, I forgot. It's AI and the white man fault. My bad. I forgot.
Now, I'm not going to lie. Towards the end, he was cooking, because that's what Shorty and I talked about last week with the pay cut, or people just at work and you get stagnant and you think, hey, I'm at a job, I'm making $150,000. I'm going to do this forever. So you at the job 4 or 5, maybe 6 years. You made $150,000 6 years and you did not try to increase your skill set. You got laid off. Now you're competing with all the other sharks that's out here trying to get $150,000 plus. And when you get into the interview, you can't talk about nothing. What you did does not look special in the 4, 5, 6 years you were there. It looks like you were just a worker. And you're not able to solve the problems that they want you to solve at the company. And that is what a lot of people miss. Like he was talking about, you did the bare minimum, you just get paid. And I get it. A lot of people say, hey, it's just a job, do my job, come home. And certain jobs, that ain't enough. You got to have, if you want to get your bonus, if you want to get promoted, you got to have stuff that you can show you're attributed to in your role so you can put it on your resume. And the worst case scenario, you get laid off, you got something to fall back on, and you see a role and say, hey, like prime example, let's say the company needs somebody to start up a sock from scratch. And let's say at your company, you was at 5 years, you was like one of the first new hires, and y'all set up a new sock from scratch. You went to be a lead. You enabled a certain type of detection strategies. You enabled AI, insider threat programs, threat intel, QA processes, right? Incident response plans. Now you implemented all these things. You created these things. You take these same things and go talk about them at length in an interview. And you're going to get an offer from somewhere, because you can't fake that. And he was either a guy on TikTok or something where they're just talking about like the new candidates are like trying to use AI so much in their interviews. You can tell, because when they finally get to asking you questions, it don't sound like how they was answering the questions. And people don't realize we're not done. We know. I've had to do assessments for interview process where they say, hey, we got you to do this assessment. Before this, you need to run this application and leave your webcam on, and we're going to record your screen. Because they're tired of people using AI. And so that's another way. Some of these jobs, you cannot fake it. You cannot hide it. You got to know exactly what you are doing. And I'm just telling you, man, it's Q3 is hiring. But if you don't know what you're doing, you got a bad resume, bad job search strategy, no skills, it's going to be a tough one on you. I'm telling you, it's going to be a tough one. But shout out to Benny for that, man. Let me see where we at. So clothing manufacturer Levi Strauss & Company filed an official Form 8K disclosure with the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission, SEC, revealing that malicious actors compromised company computers by voice phishing three employees. Threat actors tricked the target workers into granting remote access or revealing internal credentials, enabling the exfiltration of corporate data from those specific employee workstations. Security researchers suspect that this incident is tied to UNC 6671, the same voice phishing cybercrime collective currently targeting financial and investment firms. The company's incident response team isolated and terminated the unauthorized access quickly enough to prevent exposure of customer databases or payment information. Levi's reported no business operational disruptions across its network of 3,300 physical retail stores or its global e-commerce portals. The company expects no material financial impact from the breach. SEC reporting requirements are turning mandatory filings into near real-time cyber threat feeds. It also serves as a reminder that non-tech global brands with $6 billion in revenue are prime targets for social engineering campaigns. So this is another one kind of what we're talking about where the employees are the weakest link. And yeah, security awareness, man. Security awareness. 9 times out of 10, I know in these articles they oversimplify what happens. I'm probably pretty sure these people, well, you know what? I'm not even going to say that it was pretty convincing. I'm just going to say the people were naive and didn't know what they were doing and got compromised that way. Luckily, though, shout out to the IR team. They were able to catch it before it just they had the access for too long and actually exfiltrated data and tried to get money out of them. So shout out to them. So at least you can say, hey, yeah, we got defensive depth. Yeah, we got compromised by our help desk or whatever. But we initially saw the threat actor. We terminated the session. We contained the host, and we got rid of the threat actors in their environment. So I know they was busy, so shout out to the incident responders. Normally, we do not hear a data breach going like that. So shout out to them. And so to stay on hacks real quick, let's talk about a Canadian hacker was pretty much found guilty for his Snowflake. So the Snowflake hacker faces 32 years after extorting 165-plus companies. 26-year-old Canadian citizen Connor Riley Muka, known as Alexander Muka and Wafu, formally pleaded guilty in the U.S. federal court to 4 counts, including computer fraud, wire fraud, and aggravated identity theft. Between February and October 2024, Muka and his co-conspirator, John Aaron Benz, orchestrated a massive extortion campaign targeting corporate tenants of the cloud storage giant Snowflake. So here's the method of entry. The attackers did not breach Snowflake's core infrastructure. Instead, they bought stolen corporate creds off dark web marketplaces, harvested by info-stealing malware, and lied directly into enterprise customer accounts that did not have MFA enabled. Stolen data covered 165-plus major orgs, including AT&T, Ticketmaster, Santander, Pure Storage, and Advanced Auto Parts. Exfiltrating phone logs, payroll records, social security numbers, and banking data affecting over 100 million individuals. They extorted over $2.5 million in Bitcoin from victims, with victim companies suffering over $9.5 million in direct remediation losses. In one instance, Muka re-extorted a target using stolen personal records of a government official's family. He now faces up to 32 years in federal prison at his October 27th sentencing. So this is one of the things where it was a lot going on. The fact that these credentials were out there on the dark web, able to log in to accounts that did not have MFA enabled. It's the simple things, man. Every week I've been talking about the little things. With Denzel, and I cannot think of his name. I want to say it's the dude that plays Mr. Robot. But yeah, it's the little things, man. It's the little things. Now, I think one of the fun ones I had was it was this. It was real emails hijack, payments, attack chains, and H1 2026. And now I've just been trying to talk about some technical things in the way that, you know, you guys like, but you can also still use it in an interview or something like that. We still want to be entertaining, but also education, I guess. Let's get it, Johnny. Well, let me do it. Since Shorty not here. Actually, let me do it real quick.
And I'm Cyber Shorty.
Let's do this, Johnny.
There we go. So, two modern cyber attack chains disrupting corporate trust. Security researchers at Gen Threat Labs published an analysis detailing two sophisticated attack chains that dominated the threat landscape in the first half of 2026. The key takeaway, attackers are no longer relying on breaking system encryption or triggering obvious email spam flags. Instead, they are manipulating authorized user environments from within trusted workflows. So two attack chains, compromised email to session hijack. Attackers take over legitimate active corporate email mailboxes, meaning outbound emails pass SPF, DKIM, and domain reputation checks without flagging. They send routine invoice or shipment notifications containing a JavaScript dropper. This triggers a multi-stage PowerShell pipeline that alters local proxy settings and installs a rogue browser extension to manipulate live banking sessions. So, the other one is a smart contract clipboard hijacker. It's a Rust-compiled malware monitors system clipboards for cryptocurrency wallet strings across 21 different blockchain protocols. When a user copies a destination wallet address, the malware instantly replaces it with an attacker-controlled address that shares similar opening and closing characters. To hide its command and control C2 servers, the malware uses Ether hiding, reading infrastructure configuration pointers stored inside smart contracts on the Binance Smart Chain, making simple domain takedowns ineffective. That's interesting. Let me see if I can click on that because I want to see what type of pictures they have for that. Give me a second. So this is the first one that compromised the business email, invoice to shipment email, JavaScript drops. Here's PowerShell staging, obfuscated loader, proxy browser charges. Oh no, changes. Sorry, then banking session interception. And this is the crypto clipper chain one right here. Oops, let me see if we got another picture on here. We don't. Okay, I just wanted to talk about that briefly. You can actually probably go research that more in depth, but these simple things like another, let's do an interview thing. I know y'all hear me like, dang, he always talking about interviewing. You'll thank me later. Sometimes you may not know how to answer a question, but you can bring up something like this and it's interesting because it may be something that they're facing. And thinking about how, so a lot of times you worried about your company getting breached, but you forget that the people you do business with, they have a lot of business email compromises and why you should catch those pretty quickly. Because a lot of times they don't know about them until you notify them about them. So shout out to them for that article. Let's see, what do we have left that we didn't talk about? I think the only one we didn't do was Cloudflare, yeah. So they launched a headless browser for AI agents, and this one probably won't be super long. Let's see. As autonomous AI agents increasingly handle web browsing, web scraping, and let me get this thing out of here. It's pissing me off. As autonomous AI agents increasingly handle web browsing, web scraping, and data extraction at scale, Cloudflare launched KiteSurf, a serverless, stateless web browser engine designed to especially for machines rather than humans. Traditional headless browsers like Google Chrome carry massive resource overhead because they are built around human browser expectations, rendering high refresh UI layouts, supporting extension architectures, and managing tab sessions. KiteSurf strips away all human visual elements running inside V8, isolates directly on top of Cloudflare's workers. It uses a lightweight stack incorporating the Blitz rendering engine and Firefox Stylo CSS parser. So, compute footprint. It uses 3.1x to 3.8x less CPU and 4.7x to 7x less, less RAM compared to traditional headless Chromium instances. Developed in just 12 weeks, KiteSurf has already passed over 215,000 web platform tests, successfully rendering complex static and dynamic sites like Wikipedia and Hacker News. Currently in free beta via Cloudflare browser rendering. It does not currently support video playback, WebGL, or long authenticated stateful user sessions, for which Chromium remains the fallback. Okay, so like we got another option out here for the agents to be using the KiteSurf. So I will try to keep up with that and see how they go with that. I don't think I talked about any cool Reddits today. Let me see what we got on Reddit. Okay. I think I read this one last week. So it's a person that said, "Hey, y'all, I'm trying to land a help desk job to try and get my career in IT started, but I can't even land an interview. I completed the Google IT Tech Support Certificate, which got me interested in the field. After that, I went and completed the trifecta, CompTIA A+, NET+, and SET+, and was very excited to add that to my resume and hopefully get it some, at least some attention for an entry-level role. But I received nothing but rejection. Pretty disheartening to think that I may be stuck in my warehouse job with no hope of a future in IT. I have put a lot of work and money into this and do not know how to proceed. Do I earn another cert, or is that just a waste of time? I don't care about the money that much, but pretty feel stuck here. Certs I was considering as my next step, Microsoft AB900 Fundamentals, CompTIA, CISA Plus, or Cisco CCNA. Would adding one of these add more juice to my resume?" No. You has got certs. You do not have anything that you built, so you don't have a degree, possibly. Even though I know you probably can do the job because you passed the certifications, they're going to need to see you know how to do some stuff. So I would suggest like one or two big projects, do them over and over again, and then start applying. That's why I tell people to do the course careers when overspending all their money on A+. It don't guarantee anything. It doesn't show you anything. You just memorize the stuff to pass. And to me, it's a waste of money. Not only that, you then are low-key overqualified because you got Security Plus and Network Plus. You don't need those to do help desk. So that is why I tell people all the time, like, hey, you don't need all those certifications. You need skills that you can show tangible evidence that you know how to complete. And I want to see what a couple of the reactions say. Okay, so somebody said they're an IT hiring manager here. Let's see what they say. "Certs help a lot, but I've never hired for certs. I hire for three things: experience, skills. Do I want to work with this person? I worked in IT for more than 10 years, starting in support, moving up through sysadmin to a manager spot. I've gotten one cert in my whole career, and I've hired many people who had none at all. Certs don't hurt. They show that you are trying to learn and grow your career, and you can pass a test. What certs don't do is say anything about your real-life experience. How do you handle a tough customer? What's your philosophy on the project management? Do you crack under pressure? Certs can't build any of those skills. They just show that you were able to learn a set of facts and figure to pass the test. What I recommend... build out your LinkedIn, go to meetups, attend webinars, ask normal questions. Don't be annoying or weird. You'd be surprised how much knowing someone and getting a recommendation from someone you might not know very well. Get some actual experience. This might mean taking an unpaid internship or volunteering. Working for free sucks, but getting actual experience on your resume will give you something to talk about, and it'll show the company you're interviewing for that you were employable and reliable and could for some facet actually do the work, even if it was free. Find a cause you care about and volunteer. The interviewer might have the same likes and it'll give something to talk about. Adds to the do I want to work with this person bucket. Lastly, go in with a positive attitude. Looking for work sucks. It's tiring and can drag on forever. And overall, isn't a great experience, but a lot of what we deal with in life is a self-fulfilling prophecy. I worked in tech and IT for over 10 years and never at any point has someone said to me, oh man, this is a great time to get hired in IT. Get out there and find a great job. It's always, oh man, this market sucks. I can't find a job. I can't get an interview. It sucks. Pick yourself up by the bootstraps. Go out there with a positive attitude and you'll get noticed. Good luck. So one thing I would also add in that he didn't say, the company that you're at, they probably have IT, whether it's internal or outsourced. Ask them. Let me see if this thing is still going on. I think I turned it off, but I'll double check. Okay. Yeah. Ask them what they hiring for. Like, tell them you're interested in getting the IT and see what they got. Why do I say that? I've talked to so many people over the years, and I'm like, yo, have you told your company you're interested in getting the cybersecurity or IT? No, I haven't told them. Tell them. It's cheaper to get you on versus bringing somebody external with more experience. But I like what the hiring manager said. That's why he said the same thing I said. Like, we've seen people. If I could play these, like, I might start putting these things on Patreon. I mean, I don't know. If I could put some of my consultation calls up where people have the SEC Plus, the CYSA Plus, they can't answer basic questions that you would do in a SOC, how do you think you're going to get hired by anybody? Them certs don't mean anything. People told you to go get them certs, but they're not practical. Find practical certifications. That's why I love the Blue Team Level 1 and all the other practical Blue Team certifications. Why? Because you cannot just study and think you're going to pass it. You got to know something. So that was dope. And I think we had one more that was pretty interesting. So it says, unemployable after EEOC case. I left my job 2 years ago after a sexual harassment incident escalated to the EEOC. I never, ever would have filed a federal complaint, but my sister works with lawyers and said I should, so I did. And I won. Cool. But I only got a year of pay. Lawyer took a third, of course, and a good reference. It settled out 4 months after I left, and I've been searching for a job since. I make it to interviews, but I have yet to figure out a way to explain leaving a high-paying career after 10 years without a plan or a degree. I can't talk about what happened. I signed an NDA, but I'm a bad liar, and the interviewer always catches on that I'm hiding something, so I never get a second interview or hire. Why you just gonna say, the easiest thing to say, you know, I left to go pursue roles that better align my long-term career goals. Keep it simple. Between service and debt and my normal life, I'm already broke. My 401k is almost empty. I'm 45, by the way. With some mental health issues, I'm pretty sure I'll be filing bankruptcy soon. I'm back in school, but 2 years away from my bachelor's. I can't lose my house, so I'm getting ready to walk into every store in town with my resume and hope for minimum wage. Thanks for reading this. I just feel so lost and never expected to be here. This goes back into my... you can watch a snippet on Textual Chatter about, like, when should you take a pay cut. At the beginning of the episode, I told people, if you have not interviewed in a while, blow your resume off, apply, and start interviewing so you can build up them skills. And you won't have to do it on the fly when you actually need to do it. You'll be doing it out of luxury. This person, I don't know what their profession is, but that is one of the things. You got your job, your high-paying career. You didn't decide to go get a degree. So now, when you get out, you may not be checking all the boxes. You got to make sure you check all the boxes, because some jobs will only hire the people if they meet the minimum requirements. If you don't meet them, they will not even call you back. I'm going to see if we got any interesting things. So one person said, after working incredibly hard for 10 years straight, I decided to take a little sabbatical. I wanted to take a step back and observe the world for a while before deciding what to dive into next. It's been fun, but frankly, I'm getting bored and I'm excited to get back to work. Caring for a relative is always a good one. Saying that basically stops any further inquiry on that side, and it's always technically true since you're caring for yourself. Hey, hold on, man. Hold on. Hold on. That was fire. Where's the air horns at? Or let me just do this one.
He ate down.
That was funny. So this is a good question. Somebody said, I don't mean to be too personal, but do you have some emotion around the end of your last position? I would, for sure. Maybe part of your hesitancy is presenting yourself as valuable has something to do with that, because it's a very easy thing to smooth over, took a sabbatical, went back to school, etc. I wonder if the recruiters are picking up on the emotion behind your hesitancy. I found more and more that the overall feeling I leave recruiters with has a lot more to do with moving on in the process than having the perfect answers. Your time off is very defensible, if you believe it is. Yep, so they said it's a problem. I've been in therapy on my dime, and it's like they see the emotions behind my eyes as soon as it's brought up. As many have said, the small town thing probably isn't helping either. I find myself wondering what they've heard and if they've already prejudged me. It's a me issue at this point with some outside complications, I suppose, and I know it. For some reason today was kind of a breaking point. I got another rejection email from somewhere I thought I might get in. Okay. Yeah, so that giving them all good advice. I've never dealt with anybody like that. I would love to have a conversation with a person who has won an EOC, sexual harassment, something like that, left a job for years. And we could talk about it on another show. But no, that was definitely so. I felt like those two were pretty interesting. Now, when it comes to what do we have left? All right. So this says, if we are at home, these companies aren't making money. It's a problem for a greedy capitalistic society. Let's see what she's talking about.
I understand why they didn't want us to come back. why they want us to come back in office. Because for one, all these other industries are not making money if we stay at home. We have to be outside in order for them to make money, right? Especially with cars, especially with like gas, oil, maintenance on the car, insurance for the car. And when you think about all the businesses, when you're eating out too, like if you're cooking at home, then they're not making money. I see why they want us to come in office, but let me tell you something. If you have a remote job right now, hold on to that bitch. If you can, hold on to it. Hold on.
This is, I wonder if I could Google this. Maybe I can find it on my phone. But I covered this on the channel about 3-4 years ago. It was like New York lost like $2 billion from people working remote. Let me see. Let me find a New York textual chatter. Yeah. So remote work, this was 3 years ago. Remote work is costing New York City $12 billion a year. So to sum it up, if everybody is at home, they cannot keep the economy thriving because of they're not going to the same places. Some places we only went to because it was by the office. So that's how it is. Like all these big places, like, hey, we put too much money in here. We told these city officials, hey, when we put this company here, we're going to pay people a minimum of, you know, $100,000, and it's going to trickle off into the economy. And that's when other people got wind of it, and they start building grocery stores and shopping parts and all this. So it's all connected. So I definitely am with her on that. I would say some companies, not necessarily they're not making money, but they're not making the most money they could because some of these places weren't modernized. It was, you walk in to eat. They weren't on Uber Eats. They weren't on DoorDash and all these other places. So, yeah, man, if you got a remote job, hang on to it because everywhere else is 3 days, 4 days, 5 days on site sometimes, and you're just like, bruh, I get it, fam, but I don't want to see y'all that much. I'm not trying to be sick. And let's see. This last one I thought was pretty cool. It's about you got to quit your job to get a raise. All right, here we go.
It's crazy because they keep screaming nobody wants to work anymore, but then you have to quit your job just to get a raise. Like, for real, the job you are currently at will not give you a substantial bump in your salary in most situations. If you need a jump in your salary, you're going to have to leave the job you're at and go get another job, even if it's doing the same exact thing. And that's a crazy reality as they're saying, oh, people don't want to work. Y'all aren't paying people. Most jobs, like the pay increases they give, are too small to keep up with inflation. If the price of housing keeps going up, I can no longer afford my house, my apartment on the salary you're giving me with these little bumps, I gotta leave. And it's not me being ridiculous, but you can't be with the company for 30 years anymore because you won't have enough money to live unless you have a spouse, roommate, whatever, that's making buku so, you know, they can take on the brunt of that housing cost. But you have to leave your job just to make more money. And that's an insane reality. So I just don't think people are talking about this enough anymore, that if companies want us to stay, if companies want us to be with them long-term, pay people for their time. Give them the money they need to be able to pay their bills, to be able to pay for their housing, and come to work not feeling stressed and angry. But nope, they just gonna keep blaming people and saying people don't want to work anymore. No, people just don't want to work for free. They don't want to be underpaid anymore. There's a big difference. But that's my soapbox for the day. Y'all have a good day.
Hey, nah. Hang on.
Down.
That's facts. A couple things. One, sometimes, unfortunately, the only thing that I got the answer to that is you got to make more money. And that sounds like it's capitalistic, but as being a person that is whatever percent of earners I'm already in, I've realized a long time ago, nobody going to come save me. Stuff's not going to get cheaper. I got to figure out to make more money every year. And so typically your job will need to do 3-5%. You need to figure out every year how you can make 10% more money than when you made last year. So think about whatever you make now, because you got to keep up with inflation, do 10% of whatever your salary is, say, hey, how can I make that on the side? And then figure out how to turn that 10 to 20 into 30. Because truth be told, everybody got to start having their own side things. You never know these companies. People get laid off after years. It's a lot. And let's talk about this. Sometimes you can't even move up in your company or get a title change unless you leave and come back or just leave in general. That's why for the first part of your career, they do tell you go ahead and job hop 2-3 times, because let's say, for instance, we got employee A, employee B. Employee A stayed at, let's say they both started the same company and they started at $40,000. Now, employee A stayed at the company for 5 years, and right now he is making, we're going to be generous to him, he's making $60,000. We're going to be generous. We're going to say he got a promotion and a raise in those 5 years. B started at $40,000 and now he's making $120,000 because he's job hopped twice. That's almost double his thing. And you're probably going to watch this back and say that's some crazy math. I promise you it's not. It happens more times than you think. Like, if you didn't watch one of my last episodes with my friend Chris, where we have two different opinions on working at companies, where he say, hey, I like to stay and grow somewhere. And I'm like, I would too. But at the same time, it got to be a good return on investment for me. I'm not going to work there so long where I'm only getting, let's say they hitting career highs and profit and margins, but I'm only getting 3%. That don't add up for me. I got to do something to take care of me and my family because I'm the only person that cares about them like I should. That company cares about that company. They care about you a little bit, but not like they care about making money for the company. And so he's right. So short answer is to try to make more money. Government not going to come save nobody. They're trying to make everything from them Trump checks and everything else has all fallen back on the working class American. And there probably are some things that we could do to fix it. I'm not that versed in those topics to see what actually would help us get there. So until then, you got to make more money. And I think I covered just about everything I had for the most part today. If you got to the end and you enjoyed it, of course, thumbs up, like, subscribe. But also, if you need some career help, I got a couple of spots open that can get you in. We're making magic. We're taking everything to the next level. And I just hope to see you there. And so I'll have that link to all my coaching stuff in the description. I'll have the link to where you can listen to this if you don't want to watch it all the time on YouTube. But, hey, I appreciate you. And until next time, we out.